Less satisfactory alternatives were available. Inserting the offending books in canisters of negatively polarized octyron and sinking them in the fathomless depths of the sea was one. Burial in deep caves on land was earlier ruled out after some districts complained of walking trees and five-headed cats. But before long, the magic seeped out, and eventually fishermen complained of shoals of invisible fish or psychic clams. A temporary solution was the construction, in various centres of magical lore, of large rooms made of denatured octyron, which is impervious to most forms of magic. Here, the more critical grimoires could be stored until their potency had attenuated. That was how there came to be at Unseen University the Octavo, greatest of all grimoires, formerly owned by the creator of the universe. It was this book that Rincewind had once opened for a bet. He had only had a second to stare at a page before setting off various alarm spells, but this was time enough for one spell to leap from it and settle in his memory like a toad in a stone. "Then what?" said Twoflower. "Oh, they dragged me out, thrashed me, of course."
"And no one knows what the spell does?"
Rincewind shook his head.
"It had vanished from the page," he said. "No one will know until I say it. Or until I die, of course. Then it will sort of say itself. For all I know, it stops the universe, or ends time, or anything."
Twoflower patted him on the shoulder.
"No sense in brooding," he said cheerfully. "Let's have another look for a way out."
Rincewind shook his head. All the terror had been spent now. He had broken through the terror barrier, perhaps, and was in the dead calm state of mind that lies on the other side. Anyway, he had ceased to gibber.
"We're doomed," he stated. "We've been walking around all night. I tell you, this place is a spider-web. It doesn't matter which way we go, we'll end up in the centre."
"It was kind of you to come looking for me anyway," said Twoflower. "How did you manage it exactly? It was very impressive."
"Oh, well," began the wizard awkwardly, "I just thought I can't leave old Twoflower there and..."
"So what we've got to do now is find this Bel Shamharoth person and explain things to him, and perhaps he'll let us out," said Twoflower.
Rincewind ran a finger around his ear.
"It must be the funny echoes in here," he said. "I thought I heard you use words like find and explain."
"That's right."
Rincewind glared at him in the hellish purple glow.
"Find Bel Shamharoth," he said.
"Yes. We don't have to get involved."
"Find the soul render and not get involved. Just give him a nod, I suppose, and ask the way to the exit. Explain things to the sender of the aim."
Rincewind bit off the end of the word just in time and finished,
"You're insane. Hey, come back."
He darted down the passage after Twoflower and after a few moments came to a halt with a groan. The violet light was intense here, giving everything new and unpleasant colours. This wasn't a passage. It was a wide room with walls to a number that Rincewind didn't dare to contemplate, and A and 7A passages radiating from it. Rincewind saw, a little way off, a low altar with the same number of sides as 4 times 2. It didn't occupy the centre of the room, however. The centre was occupied by a huge stone slab with twice as many sides as a square. It looked massive. In the strange light it appeared to be slightly tilted, with one edge standing proud of the slabs around it. Twoflower was standing on it.
"Hey, Rincewind, look what's here!"
The luggage came ambling down one of the other passages that radiated from the room.
"That's great," said Rincewind. "Fine, it can lead us out of here. Now."
Twoflower was already rummaging in the chest.
"Yes," he said. "After I've taken a few pictures, just let me fit the attachment."
"I said now."
Rincewind stopped. Harun the barbarian was standing in the passage mouth directly opposite him, a great black sword held in one ham-sized fist.
"You?"
said Harun uncertainly.
Yes, said Rincewind. "Harun, isn't it? Long time no see. What brings you here?"
Harun pointed to the luggage.
"That," he said.
This much conversation seemed to exhaust Harun. Then he added, in a tone that combined statement, claim, threat, and ultimatum,
"Mine." "It belongs to Twoflower here," said Rincewind. "Here's a tip. Don't touch it."
It dawned on him that that was precisely the wrong thing to say, but Harun had already pushed Twoflower away and was reaching for the luggage, which sprouted legs, backed away, and raised its lid threateningly. In the uncertain light, Rincewind thought he could see